listening to Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM in Northampton.
Sundays at 10 a.m., WXOJ's radio show, Occupy the Airwaves, has the latest news from the occupation movement, locally, regionally, nationally, and around the planet. Tune in at 103.3 FM or webcasting at www.valleyfreeradio.org. Blogging at occupytheairwaves.wordpress.com. Listeners can call into the show at 413-585-1033.
And you're listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Dwayne Rainey's in the studio here today.
In person.
Thanks for coming in, Dwayne. Today is, well, no, I'll start with this story first. So I stopped in at the house for lunch today.
What'd you have?
And local roots. Thanks to Michael Doctor.
Very good.
And I was sitting at the kitchen sink, so looking out the window, which overlooks the rail trail. And the ducks and the chickens were out in the yard. I let them roam free. And I was looking out towards the rail trail where I just put a pile of terracotta pots out in the free pile. And there's also an air pump out there. And so I was looking out that way, eating my lunch. And I saw a couple of boys, maybe 9, 10, 11 years old. They stopped on bikes and they pulled up to the pump. And I thought I couldn't quite tell what they were doing. It looked like it was unclear what they were doing. And then all of a sudden I noticed one of the boys was walking towards the yard, towards one of the chickens with a terracotta pot in his hand, and he hurled it at the chicken, and I went flying out of the house. It's probably 30 yards from the kitchen sink to the rail trail. I leaped over that poor chicken in the rhododendron plant, and the boy was getting on his bike, and he was trying to pedal away, but I was kind of fast for him. And so I stopped right in front of him. I would have tackled him if I had to. I stopped right in front of him. And I was like, "What did you just do?" And he said, I'm sorry. My brother dared me to do it." And I said, "Well, you need to take responsibility for what you do with your own actions. And you can't just endanger other living things' lives." And he was like, "I'm sorry." And I said, "I'm Ruthie. What's your name?" And he said, "Peter." He was wearing a string pink backpack, and he had braces on, if anyone knows who this boy is. I said, "Where do you live?" And I said, "I don't care where you live. This is Earth Day. Take some time to think about how your actions affect other living things." He was like, "Okay.
Will there be a test?" That was the bottom line. What do you want to know?
Anyway, his brother had already had ridden up the path, and his brother had escaped, but I didn't really want him to tell me. He was going to tell me where he lived, but then I was like, "Oh, this poor kid. If he tells me where he lives, he probably won't be able to sleep at night because he's afraid I'm going to come after him or something."
With a pot.
With a pot. Today, this morning, when I was downtown, I asked a few people if they had any Earth Day plans.
My plan today on Earth Day is to volunteer.
Thank you. Okay, cool. Hope you're on time.
And mine is to do my group. Yeah, keep myself out of trouble.
All right.
I'll talk to you later, my love.
I'm just so excited that it's sunny and warm after 5. And last night, my neighbor and I were just talking about the colors changing in the yards. And I'm looking forward to maybe spending it watching the sunset or going for a run in the pouring down rain.
I'm going to do a couple of runs for pedal people, which is trash recycling and helping the environment by using a bicycle.
Oh, Dwayne, sorry. I was recording of you. I should give you a chance to say something in person since you're here in person.
I see you selectively cut out parts.
Yeah, because when I knew you were coming in, I knew you could fill in.
Very good.
So at Smith College today, they had a celebration of Earth Day in the campus lawn. And so here's someone I talked to there.
I just got offered a smoothie. Can you tell me your name?
I'm Maya Cutts. I'm president of Engineers for a Sustainable World, which is a student org.
Tell me about the smoothie.
So one of our big year-long projects has been setting up a solar-powered charging station for laptops in front of the campus center.
A solar-powered
charging station. Okay. So it basically just has an open outlet, and you can plug anything into it, including a blender. Uh-huh. So we plugged in a blender, and we're making smoothies for Earth Week to hand out for free.
So is it always available, like free electricity?
It's free electricity until the end of senior week because we can't put up a permanent installation on campus, unfortunately. Uh-huh. So after senior week, we're going to move that installation over to Ford Hall, which is the engineering building.
Cool.
Yeah. If we're really lucky, they'll let us keep it there.
Yeah. Does it get a lot of use? Or?
It's been in use pretty frequently, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, if you walk by, you'll often see a student sitting there with a laptop or plugging in their phone.
Uh-huh. Have you seen many other uses besides the blender?
Not so much. Mostly laptops.
Thanks for the smoothie.
Yeah, anytime.
So the next clip is about 15 minutes of different students talking about student organizations and things that are going on in campus. On campus, Dorian, you look like you might have something to say.
I always look like I have something to say.
Here we go.
So my name's Lily.
Hi, I'm Shelby.
I'm Claire.
And we are all working with the Real Food Challenge at Smith. The Real Food Challenge is a national organization of student activists working towards a $1 billion shift in the food system, towards food that is truly nourishing to the producers, consumers, communities, and the earth. And we decided one big component of the Real Food Challenge is building coalitions with other organizations and folks searching for social justice, environmental justice, or food justice in this world and in this country. And so we've invited many orgs who are seeking justice to come up and share their mission and share their goals for this campus and for the earth.
Hello. I'm Ariana, and I'm here on behalf of Organizing for Undocumented Student Rights. Since 2012, Organizing for Undocumented Student Rights has worked to make Smith a place that is inclusive and supportive of undocumented students. Over the past year, we have collaborated with faculty, alumni, and students from all five colleges towards the bigger goal of making changes in Smith's admission and financial aid policy, while not losing sight of the work needed to make this campus an environment where undocumented students can thrive. We stand here today in support of Earth Week and the Real Food Challenge with the knowledge that a portion of locally grown food and fruit on this campus has been picked by undocumented workers who are underpaid, exploited, and denied their rights as laborers and as humans. We will be holding a workshop with SACA this Sunday at 2 p.m. in Sealy 110 to talk more about the human cost of food injustice, and we encourage you all to come and contribute to this discussion.
Hi, I'm here on behalf of Vox, which is Smith College's Voices for Choice Reproductive Justice Club, and we would like to reaffirm every individual's right to make decisions about a sustainable and healthy environment where everybody can work to its highest capacity under the full control of whoever it is. And we also want to encourage that by having a workshop on sustainable menstrual products that's actually going to be happening today in room 102 in the CC at 4:30 p.m. So if you want to learn a little bit more about how your body can interact with making this world a more sustainable and better place for you, your community, and the planet itself, please come by. And you can win a Diva Cup, or a Keeper Cup, or a Glad Rag, or some cotton tampons, or some cotton pads.
I'm here on behalf of SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine, and while I've been taking a wonderful plant physiology course as part of my major this semester, I've been really thinking, you know, getting beyond the molecular level on how everything is interconnected. The lives that we lead, the lives of the organisms, and the communities and the ecosystems around us. And I've also been doing a lot of reading and facing the terrible truth that colonialism, whether it's here in the U.S. or whether it's in Palestine, is really, really terrible for the environment. Every year in Palestine, thousands of trees are uprooted by the army or burned down by puritanical Israeli settlers who are trying to gain control of as much of the land as possible. And while they're in the process of colonizing the land, they're doing things that are terrible for it, such as trying to raise cattle in really, really arid regions that where there's not nearly enough water to support the cattle. These activities together are very bad for the natural carbon sequestration process in the Palestinian ecosystem, and it's increasing the rates of desertification and decreasing the amount of usable land. If you want more information about Palestine in general and how to support the Palestinian popular struggle, like, I'm your gal. And on April 29th at 6 p.m. in the Nielsen Browsing Room, we're going to have Vijay Prasad come to talk about his book, which brought together, like, it's called Letters to Palestine, and it brought together a whole bunch of writers basically all over the place responding to war and occupation in Palestine. So, yeah, you should all come out. It's going to be awesome.
So there's a 12-year-old I see whenever I come home from Smith. She's my little sister. And every time I come home and I see her, I like to cook her gourmet dinners. But my version of gourmet meals is usually what's ever left in the fridge, but I always try to find a way to whip it up to look fancy. And sometimes my little sister will say, like, please don't do that, I don't want it. But I'm always like, please just let me, and she always lets me. There's another 12-year-old. This one I don't cook gourmet meals for. This 12-year-old walks into Kate's kitchen in Holyoke, Massachusetts, in search for food at night when there's no food left in their house. I'm Allison, and I'm the president of the Food Recovery Network here at Smith. What I want to talk about today is how little action causes big action. Our club recovers food from Smith College dining halls and brings it to a shelter in Holyoke called Kate's Kitchen. Kate's Kitchen feeds its local community in Holyoke and serves warm meals 365 days out of the year. Every member of the community is allowed to walk into the kitchen for a hot meal, no questions asked. By recovering for only 30 to 40 minutes twice a week, we have collected over 4,443 pounds of food. Little action, 30 to 40 minutes. Big action, 4,443 pounds of food. Inaction, nothing. By giving 30 to 40 minutes of your time twice a week, you can help defray food costs for Kate's Kitchen, prevent waste, and help provide a variety of meals to people who don't even have the means to provide them for themselves. Please join me in helping give such a simple necessity to people in need. If you give at least at max an hour per week, you can help contribute to an average of 100 pounds of fresh food saved at each recovery. Little action, 1 hour. Big action, 100 pounds of food not thrown away. Let's recover food together so that others can have the choice to make their own gourmet meals. Thank you.
Hi, we're the Smith Association of Class Activists, and we work with low-income, first-generation and working-class students on campus. Food is treated as a commodity, so it's sold for profit, and it's not treated as a human right, which it is. And so low-income, first-generation, working-class communities have the least access to safe, healthy, and affordable food, and typically suffer a lot of health issues and also live in areas that are very environmentally polluted. And we're doing a whole workshop on it on Sunday with Organizing for Undocumented Students' Rights from 2 to 3:30 in Sealy 110. Okay, we're working with the Real Food Network also, and we're tracking apples from Outlook Farms, and we're seeing who actually farms those apples, and then where do those apples wind up, and can those people who are working with the apples actually access them and have the right and the money to buy them and actually ingest them the way that we can, because we have them in our dining halls and we also pay how much money to go to the school. So
it's so cold.
Nice shot. There's a basketball hoop. It says shoot for sustainability. And they're shooting with cans and plastic bottles.
My name is Lily.
I'm Claire.
And we work with the Real Food Challenge National Organization, which is an organization of student activists working towards a $1 billion shift in the nation's food system.
Yeah, so Real Food Challenge not only works for advocacy and education about our food system on campuses, we also try to get schools to commit to shifting 20% of their dining budget to food that qualifies as real by 2020. And the categories that we use for those qualifications are fair, humane, ecologically sound, and local or community-based.
And real food is defined as food that is truly nourishing to all aspects of the food system, sort of included in the categories Claire just listed. We've got the earth, communities, consumers, and producers. And wrapped up in all of these food system issues are many social justice, environmental justice issues that the Real Food Challenge National Organization, as well as the chapters on campuses, try to combat these injustices.
Can you talk a little bit about the specific things in Northampton or at Smith College that you're involved with?
We've been trying to get working towards having that commitment happen at Smith. We've been meeting with different administrators and people in dining services to talk about making some of those shifts happen here. And also building coalitions. Do you want to talk about
that? So we're trying to build coalitions with Real Food Challenge groups at other schools. Particularly UMass and Hampshire have really strong partnerships there. And branching out into the community, we're trying to work with local farmers, which has been somewhat successful in the five college system, getting more local produce and supporting those producers and communities. Also working with groups like the Student Farm Worker Alliance, Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and NAMA. Do you want to talk about the action that you guys just went to?
So yesterday I went to an action which was organized by NAMA, which is the North Atlantic Marine Association, I think. And we went to a New England Fisheries Council meeting, which was a long and tedious all-day meeting, and we sat there, and then when there was one piece of legislation that they were discussing that would work to, well, basically allow the continued
consolidation,
that's the word, of the fisheries in the way that our land-based agriculture has been consolidated in the past few decades, and so
you mean like bigger fisheries owned by fewer people?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so we went to just be a presence and support fisher people who are trying to fight that consolidation. And some of the people in the group spoke out when they called for public testimonies in solidarity with the fisher people. And it was really a great experience.
Where was it?
It was in Mystic, Connecticut.
Can you talk about any of the farms, specific farms in the valley that you have a relationship with, that the Smith College is getting produce from?
Absolutely. So this past fall, we started getting greens from Queens Greens, which has been really an awesome experience because they're delicious organic greens. And when we were trying to research how much real food Smith was purchasing, we had the opportunity to speak with the owners of Queens Greens. And it was really great to connect with the people, she was in the middle of a harvest when the owner, when I called her. And it was great to know that what she was harvesting, to have a connection with who was harvesting it. And to know that this institution is supporting local farmers like her. We are investing in a couple other local farms.
Okay. Yogurt from Sidehill Farms.
Another fantastic operation.
Winter Moon Farms. And that's a great way to get produce all year.
And he delivers it by bike sometimes.
Yeah.
A lot of the time,
it's
too,
incredible.
Right?
Yeah. So.
He being Michael Doctor.
We're trying to build more relationships with farmers in the community, and one way that would happen is in the signing of the Real Food Challenge Campus Commitment, which holds the institution accountable to making that 20% investment of their dining services budget by 2020.
Where is Smith right now with that, do you know?
Well, we actually just had a few very important meetings with the VP of Finance, Michael Howard, and President McCartney, and dining services, and all of these parties are in complete support. And we were pushing to have them sign the commitment this semester, but they want to conduct a little bit more research, and they are planning on signing it sometime in the next 6 months. But before, one of the things entailed in the commitment is creating a food systems working group. So getting everyone at the same table, getting farmers at the same table as the students and the administrators when we're making these decisions, and really getting the input, horizontal decision making about how we want this food system to be and how we want Smith's effect.
And we also did calculations to figure out how much real food we already have at Smith. And that was a long process of entering invoices and everything. And we found we had about 9%.
Uh-huh. In terms of groups, different groups that have to collaborate to support this, I imagine the people cooking the food,
Absolutely.
Too, are a big part of that.
Yeah, they would, definitely, in creating the food systems working groups, we need the chefs at the same table so that they can have that sort of sovereignty over, what their livelihood, how the food they're cooking with shapes their livelihood. And in the way that many institutions are purchasing today, these cooks have no, very little control over what, how their food shapes their livelihood and shapes their day-to-day operations.
And it also might change some of the prep work that the chefs have to do, so we definitely want to keep communicating with them about
what they need,
whether it's something they feel is reasonable, and getting, if we need more staff or more students working on that, then trying to figure out how to make that happen.
Do you think among student tastes and student demand, like how does that fit the goals?
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of that?
I think that there's a lot of movement towards it at Smith, like just partially through like the sustainable foods concentration and all the orgs involved in environmental and social justice, but also just the food. Like when there's a local night at Smith, they have a local nights where most of the food is local, and it's like a really special night for everyone, and people get really excited about it.
Yeah, there's great energy around local food nights coming from the kitchens and coming from the students, and students love to eat root vegetables, and the cooks do a great job preparing them. So I guess the question is just like, how do we get administration to invest in these vegetables? How do we get the work power to peel all of the celery ack, and like, you know, how are we going to make this happen? And we're going to try and make it happen in the framework of Real Food Challenge. Uh-huh.
How much of the challenge does the administration say is financial?
Yeah. So part of our meeting today was actually with the vice president of finance for Smith College. And yeah, that's a big question. We really don't have an answer about exactly how much it will cost, but they seem to be on board with the fact that it's something really that a lot of students are committed to, and it would be worth, you know, shifting some money and maybe a little bit increase in the budget. But we also stress that we would try to shift things that are smart to shift, and it doesn't have to be the most expensive thing. So we can find or make smart changes that keep the budget low as much as possible.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for your work and involvement
in
all this.
Thank you.
Yeah. Those were some students from Smith College. It's Earth Day today, and they were having an event in the campus lawn with lots of different organizations talking about their activity. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM, Northampton, and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. You can also find archived shows of Out There at weatherbeard.com/Ruthie. Friday is Arbor Day, and I think they're giving away, I read in the Gazette today, they're giving away whips, little tree starts, in front of City Hall, I think on Friday, and I thought it said Saturday too. Anyway, you can look on the Gazette for more information on that. I planted a couple that I got from the free Arbor Day giveaway last year. I planted a tulip poplar by my neighbor's house, but they said they were okay with it. Behind their garage, between their garage and the rail trail. Actually, they said, Jill said, oh, I love that kind of tree.
Otherwise, you could just cut it down and make toothpicks out of the whip.
Something. All right. Out There, we'll continue in just a minute.
Valley Tango has a new time. That's Wednesday mornings at 11 to 1 in the afternoon. Tango music is beautiful, mysterious, and soulful. It has captivated the imagination of people all over the world as the music of romance. Bring a little romance into your life every Wednesday morning with Valley Tango Connect. Join me every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for Valley Tango Connect, only on Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM, WXOJ LP.
Tune in each Sunday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. for Kicking It for Peace, Culture, and Education. This is Rick Haggerty encouraging you to listen for live music and provocative interviews. Only on WXOJ 103.3 FM Northampton. Kicking It for Peace, Culture, and Education. Followed by Occupy the Airwaves. See you there.
Plant a tree for your tomorrow. It's your tree that clears the air. Plant a tree, trees for America. plant a tree today for all the world to share. Taste the breezes, life inside you, make a promise to the earth. Plant a tree, now is the time to recognize a tree for all that it is worth.
Plant a tree for your tomorrow. It's your tree that clears the air. Plant a tree, trees for America. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. For birds to sing, plant a forest for the future, where the breath of life begins with every spring. Plant a tree for your tomorrow. It's your tree that clears the air. Plant a tree, trees for America. Plant a tree today for all the world to share.
Thanks to John Denver for that message. Dwayne, you want to make an announcement?
Yes, I do. The Northampton Reuse Center is grand opening is this Saturday, April 25th, at the old landfill on Glendale Road. And there's no phone number. I guess you could look it up.
Yeah, they have a Facebook page. That's where I got that information off of.
What do they have and what do you need?
And what can you get rid of?
No diapers or toothbrushes, please.
So the Recycle, Reduce, Reuse guide just came out today, I think. It's a supplement to the Daily Hampshire Gazette and the Greenfield Recorder and the Amherst Bulletin. It's a pretty extensive guide of what to do with all kinds of household items. I wanted to share some of the information about batteries because that's something that I often get asked about by people that I pick up trash and recycling for. Household battery recycling and disposal is a big question mark. Confused about batteries? You're not alone. There are many different types of household batteries, and some should not be put in the trash. If improperly disposed of, some batteries can release mercury, cadmium, or other heavy metals into the air and water, which could eventually enter the food chain and pose health threats to people and the environment. But don't get overwhelmed. Below are disposal instructions for specific battery types. In many cases, you can simply hand batteries to the attendant at your town's transfer station or recycling center, or your trash hauler. It says, batteries of all types collected for recycling should be drained of their charge. If they still hold a charge, batteries stored together or with metal items could react and spark. If you're not sure if they're drained or if draining the power isn't possible, like when smoke detector batteries are changed twice a year, put plastic or electrical tape on the contacts or individually bag them before storage, recycling, or disposal. The main thing that I get asked about is people have little plastic bags of alkaline batteries, like the single A, double A.
I think if you want to drain them, just give them to your kid and put them in a Walkman, and it'll drain them.
Yeah, or if you got double A's and you have an electric clock, like a clock on the wall, I just put double A's in there, and even if they just have a little bit of juice left, they'll keep that clock ticking for a long time.
A good excuse to be late to work.
So with the alkaline, it says alkaline, carbon, zinc, and zinc chloride batteries. These are single-use batteries, domestically manufactured after 1996, don't have mercury or heavy metals, and so they just go in the regular trash. Some communities collect alkalines for separate disposal or recycling, but not Northampton. I'm not sure where. You can just ask at your town transfer station. So alkaline batteries include the AAAs, AAs, C, D, and 9-volt, even lantern size. But check to make sure the alkaline isn't a rechargeable, because the rechargeable ones, even though they're the same size, are composed differently.
Rechargeables are great.
Yeah, so the rechargeables contain heavy metals and should never be thrown away. They should always be recycled in special recycling programs. And there's some free recycling programs, like at Radio Shack, Staples, Lowe's, Home Depot, and many municipal transfer stations. There's a website called call2recycle.org. That sounds like it should be a phone number, but it's call2recycle.org.
I'm sure that's someone's phone number.
So the rechargeable batteries are the kind that you find in rechargeable electronics and appliances like cell phones, iPods, cordless phones, laptops, tablets, power tools, some toys, and digital cameras, camcorders, and small rechargeable appliances like bike lights, flashlights, toothbrushes, razors, and handheld vacuum cleaners. Rechargeable batteries that can be recharged with a battery recharger should also be recycled. So like the ones that aren't in as part of a packet, but the loose ones that are rolling around in the drawer that you're not sure if they're recharged or not.
Put them in the charger.
So there's the call to recycle. I guess there's boxes around somewhere. So cell phones should be recycled in a call to recycle box at your local cell phone store or in a prepaid envelope provided with your new phone. So then the producer should be responsible for taking that battery back, it sounds like. So the rechargeable batteries are like the NiCad, nickel cadmiums, or the nickel metal hydroxide, the lithium ion, the small sealed lead, or the nickel zinc, and the cell phones and their batteries. There's a couple other kinds they talk about here, button batteries and lithium batteries. Lithium batteries, they resemble alkaline batteries, and they're used in electronics as well. Just, you know, ask your town transfer center. There's some mail-in recycling programs. Go to batteryrecycling.com for information on that. And then the button batteries, these are really small and hard to keep track of sometimes.
Kind of go into hearing aids?
Yeah, right. From hearing aids.
Watches.
Watches.
Well, wouldn't, like, the, if you take it to a jeweler, wouldn't they be responsible? Or?
Yeah, I'm sure they have their own little connection or collection canister. Singing greeting cards.
Hopefully it's not the trash canister.
Singing greeting cards. That's one you got to watch out for because people might try and recycle it like paper, but it's got that button battery in there. Yeah, it says most jewelry and watch shops accept them for free recycling. Dwayne, you are a step ahead of the game.
See that?
Yep. All right, I guess you can mail those in too. Those would be a little easier and cheaper to mail in.
It's not like I got a watch or anything. It's just you would think.
So, Dwayne, a couple of shows ago, you were talking about fracking and how overwhelming it is. But I saw some good news in the paper. Do you want to share some of that?
From the Berea City Council in Kentucky.
Yeah, Berea, Kentucky. Go Kentucky.
Yes, indeed. They had a hearing, the city council members, and received applause Tuesday night when they unanimously approved a resolution opposing hydraulic fracking or fracturing in the Berea watershed areas in and around other areas in the city. And there was one good thing, that a statement that a person made, he said, depending on which study you listen to, it, referring to fracking, is either a really good thing or the worst thing in the world. So at least they took both sides and they figured it out together. But they have quite a few reservoirs in that area, and I guess they just decided that it's really not worth, I mean, taking a risk. Well, not only that, but where are they going to ship the water? What are they going to do with the water once they can just put chemicals in sand and just ruin it?
Yeah, I've been following the issue a little bit in the Berea paper, and it's there's been quite a bit of controversy and land being leased out to the oil companies. So it's pretty exciting to read that the city council voted unanimously to stop it and protect the water. There's actually going to be a film this evening at 5 at UMass as part of the UMass Earth Day celebration. They're showing Gasland, which is a documentary about communities affected by fracking. It's at the Integrated Learning Center in room 3315. You can go to the UMass Calendar of Events website for more information. And the producer, Josh Fox, he's going to be speaking tomorrow at UMass, tomorrow Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Integrated Learning Center as well.
Well, but there's another article down here saying how self-reliant is Berea. And we're talking about water. And apparently, according to the United States Geological Survey, the average U.S. resident uses 80 to 100 gallons of water a day. A little food for thought. Next time you hit that flush.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking the other day about how it's legally mandated, like code mandates in many, many communities, that you have to have electric hookup, you have to have water hookup, you have to have these things pumped into your house, whether you want to try and live off the grid or not. And they say it's a public health issue, and I'm not disagreeing with that, but I was trying to make the comparison between having a constant supply of something, of electricity or water pumped into your house, and how that can contribute to excess and waste, because it's always there. And what if it was legally mandated? What if code mandated that you had to have a conveyor belt, like you see at the airport when luggage comes through the hole? What if you had a conveyor belt into your kitchen of food that's nonstop, just passing before you all the time? I feel like that would be hard for me to not be a glutton about it.
America would have a bigger obesity problem, I believe.
But it's
especially if they had cake and cookies and stuff going by me, I'd be good.
It's tricky, right? Because it's a public health issue. Everyone should have access to good food and to clean water. But when it's mandated that it has to be pumped into our houses all the time, nonstop, it's just really hard to sometimes say no, to know what's enough.
Here's a little tidbit. It says, some people choose to drink bottled water, but everyone uses local water for their uses, partly because, according to the National Resources Defense Council, it costs from 240 to over 10,000 times more per gallon to purchase bottled water than it does to purchase a gallon of average tap water.
Wait, how many times?
240 to over 10,000 times.
As much.
More.
To purchase bottled water. That's just probably the money cost, too. Not
absolutely.
I don't know if that counts all the infrastructure.
And it all comes from a tap. I don't care what spring they say it's coming from.
Okay, here's a couple of my comments that I recorded a while ago.
The more trees that get cut down in Northampton, the less I feel like I belong here. There's been the new Cole Morgan Place, the Hospital Hill developments, the rail trail expansions along the railroad tracks where Amtrak's coming through, all those woods from Fitzwillies or from A to Z up to Stop and Shop, the area woods by Acme Auto on the corner of King and Church. I'm not saying all these things are bad necessarily, but I just feel less at home when there's less trees and wonder where I and the other animals will go as the woods go. It's ironic because some of these things have allowed people like myself greater access to the woods in nonviolent ways, like the rail trails. But when will it end? If you don't have any money, it seems like you ought to be able to access the things that just are, like the trees and the plains and the mountains, streams and rivers. If you do have money, you should be able to access the things that money can buy, like steel and asphalt and concrete and cars and... But sometimes it seems like it's the other way around. Guess it just seems sometimes like if you got money, you can access everything.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, as well as Dwayne Rainey.
Hello.
So a film showing tomorrow night is The Throwaways. It's a film by Ira McKinley and Bawen Suchak. It's showing at the Academy of Music at 7. Amidst national outrage over police brutality, The Throwaways documents police shootings and the consequences of mass incarceration with searing detail, says the quote. Tickets are $10, but their NCTV has some comp tickets. I did a phone interview with Ira McKinley yesterday, so I'm going to play that. So how did you know you wanted to make this film?
Well, it's starting what's going on in the country. And part of it started when I realized in Northampton, Massachusetts, where I was living at the time, that even though you have just elected Barack Obama, we still had a long way to go with racial issues and things that's not being brought to light.
When you were living in Northampton, what were some of the ways that racism manifested that
that was part of your daily life that you were, you wanted to
speak about? When I was living in Northampton, you know, we were there at the same time in Northampton, Mass. I'm saying.
Yeah, but we have different, we're different people from different backgrounds and we have different perspectives on it. So that's, so I want to hear yours.
I'm an African-American male that has felt the oppression from since my people have been brought here to this country. See the film, let's have a conversation. Let's only have a conversation. What's the solution? I have a solution that works, and it's all compressed with everything that's going on with, you know, recycling, you know, growing food. All these things has a big factor on what needs to be done. If you're in an urban environment, then you say, okay, he won't let me have this vacant lot, but he'll let me have that rooftop. He won't let me have that rooftop, but he'll let me have that vacant lot.
Uh-huh.
There's ways to do certain things, and you have to play chess. So, like you said, we come from two different worlds.
Uh-huh.
And until you go on my journey, you're not going to have, you cannot see.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? What I'm trying to do.
Uh-huh. So you'll be there on Thursday in Northampton at the Academy of Music after the film for question and answer, is that right?
I'll be there Thursday. This film is talking about the needs that should have been talked about before Ferguson. We were, like, before Trayvon happened, we were closing this film out. Now you have seen different examples from Eric Garner to Michael Brown to the uprising to what just happened in South Carolina, what just happened in Tulsa. And people need to understand that there is this side and that side. And then when I say Black Lives Matter, people say all lives matter. Yeah, well, if all lives matter to you, then let's stand up for the Black lives that's mattering right now. Yeah. It's shown to you right in your face, and you still don't believe. So our point is, what is the solution? I have a solution. We're going to talk about it.
All right.
Okay?
That was Ira McKinley talking about the film that is showing that he co-produced and co-directed. It's at the Academy of Music called The Throwaways. It's a documentary. That's tomorrow, Thursday evening at 7. Dwayne says that was a bad pick of song. Because it's the theme from Rocky, apparently.
You've never seen Rocky?
No, I've never seen Rocky. It was my
1, 2, 5, 10, 15. I mean, there was a lot of those movies.
No, I never saw any of them.
Yeah.
No, it was my high school's, you know, the pep band.
Fight song?
Theme song. So when I hear this song, I think about the band, like the band. I was actually going to play a band version of it, but I went for that one. All right, well, thanks, Dwayne, for giving me some cultural
That's why I'm here.
Cultural help.
Musical background. Yeah, I'm sure you could find maybe a better song.
Here we go.
In me right round, baby, right round.
Oration icon. Dark in the city. That is the world.
Touch.
Tune into Subculture, the best in new wave, electro, dance, indie pop, and funk music. Friday nights from 8 to 10 here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM.
Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3, Northampton.
Are you interested in connecting with the international community in the Pioneer Valley? Then volunteer to help your immigrant neighbors improve their English and integrate better into their surroundings. Become a volunteer tutor. Take a free 15-hour training taught by the International Language Institute in downtown Northampton. For more details and an application, go to ili.edu or contact Amy at ili.edu. Students come from Africa, Asia, Europe, Latin America, and the Middle East. So volunteer to tutor and expand your world.
The Forbes Library staff would like to remind you of the incredible resource that you have in your local public library. We have tens of thousands of books for you to check out, music CDs, movies, newspapers from around the region, the state, and the country. We have a wide variety of magazines and free computer and internet access every day. We also have our incredible reference services there to help you answer particularly vexing problems. All of this is free, locally available at 20 West Street in Northampton, so come by and check us out in person or at www.forbeslibrary.org or call 587-1011 for more information.
Dwayne says I need to vindicate myself with a nicer song. So I'm getting a better song here. My apologies.
That's okay.
All right. I don't know. Garth Brooks?
This ain't coming from no prophet. Just an ordinary man. When I close my eyes, I see the way this world shall be when we go walking in it. When the last child cries for a crust of bread, when the last man dies for just words that he said, when they're sheltered over the poorest head, we shall be free. When the last thing we notice is the color of skin, and the first thing we look for is the beauty within, when the skies and the oceans are clean again, then we shall. We shall be free. We shall be free. Stand straight and walk proud. We shall be free. When we're free to love anyone we choose, when this world's big enough for all different. From our own kind of pew, then we shall be free. Yeah. We shall be free. We shall be free. Have a little faith, hold out. We shall be free. And when morning
Thanks, Dwayne. That was a much nicer song.
A little vindication.
I don't know about that, but so
can't go wrong with Garrett Brooks on that song.
So I had a little clip of a fishing trip with Dwayne that I wanted to play. It's Earth Day. We'll do something a little chilled out. Earth Day's a good day to go enjoy the woods.
And the streams.
The streams.
An undisclosed secret location.
So, Dwayne, how do you know a good fishing spot when you see one?
It just looks good.
What do you look for?
Nice little pools. I'm fishing in a brook, so nice little dark pools, maybe. I don't know. I just fish the whole brook and you see what we get.
Now, I grew up fishing in a little lake or pond that was stocked. So when I see a... slippery here. So when I see a brook or a river, you know, like the Mill River, it's like, how do you know there's any fish in there?
You just know. That's all I can say about that.
All right.
Well, we're here at this waterfall, so I'm going to take and try in here and then... I'm just going to slowly fish down a brook, and at the end of this interview, we'll see how many fish that we caught. And if we don't catch any fish, the view is beautiful. It's a sunny day, so...
And is this part of the river stocked at this time, do you know?
No.
So you're just fishing for native trout right now?
Yep. That's all.
The excitement quickly waned in that spot after Dwayne got his hook caught in a tree. And then all the line tangled up in a big knot, and he had to pull out his lighter to cut the line and re-tie it to his hook. So now we move downriver. Be sure the fish are jumping down here.
This is, I am going to catch this very, very little and beautiful fish.
Why does it keep getting tangled? Hmm?
Swallow the hook. This is bite size, but
8 inches long.
About 7.
Oh, how do you get the hook out of there?
He gulped it down.
Oh, so you have to kill it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's way down there. That's the only way.
No, it's.
I mean, it would have done so much damage.
Oh yeah, is it its stomach or something?
It just gulped it. So.
Oh. What's so it? Just...
So you can't even get, like, the
oh.
beginning. Okay, so we're going to stick this one in the bag.
It's so beautiful. The fish was beautiful. It had golden dots on a greenish, brownish, silvery background. And then it also had silver dots. And in each of the silver dots was a bright red dot. It was so pretty, I just wanted to cry. And so freshly dead and still so moist. I gave the fish's head and guts to the prowlers of the woods. And then I cooked and devoured the rest. And it was so fresh and nutritious and more local than most beans and rice and peanuts. I took another's life for my own. Please, may I live worthy of the sacrifice. You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Up at 5 o'clock.